Hello everyone, and welcome to Advanced Studio Classroom. We are on day 3 of our Nature article on page 20, and I have my wonderful panelists back with me, Amanda and Lois. Welcome, panelists.
Thank you.
Thank you, Brandon. It's good to be here.
Well, we've already talked a lot about this article, this Nature article, and we've learned a lot. What I want to do at the top of this program is review some of the words, maybe some of the words that aren't even in our vocabulary focus list, but that you think that the listeners would find helpful. And I'll start with you, Lois. What's a word from one of the past 2 days that you would like to highlight?
I would like to highlight take for granted. So I'm actually highlighting an idiom.
That's
because
right.
I really liked that. I like the definition in our vocabulary focus that said to never think about something because you believe it will always be available or stay exactly the same. And I don't want to take for granted the bees that are in North America or other parts of the world.
We can take many things for granted in life. We can take life itself for granted. We get up every day and we just go to work and do our thing, but we shouldn't take it for granted. We should be thankful for all of the things that we have been given.
Right? I know, like Amanda and I take for granted that you're hosting this program and you're going to keep us on our toes. We're taking you for granted, Brandon.
It might be the other way around. Okay, Amanda, a word from one of the past 2 days.
Okay, I like the adjective resilient. That means to be able to improve quickly after being hurt or being ill. Of course, I think it's good if people are resilient or you find yourself being resilient in a difficult situation. And I just really like that adjective because it's very practical for our everyday life. Oftentimes, we need to learn to be resilient in difficult circumstances.
That's right. And we also learned the word catastrophe. And you may be familiar with that, but if you see something that just terrible, something terrible that happens, maybe an earthquake or something like that, or does lots of damage, you could call that a catastrophe. It's a bad situation. And in this article, we are learning about something that is a catastrophe because lots of bees are dying off. At least it could lead to a catastrophe. Maybe we wouldn't call it that quite yet, because when we use the word catastrophe, we really are talking about something that is wide-ranging and just really terrible. And so it's trending or going in that direction, but maybe we wouldn't call it a catastrophe quite yet.
Right. So the scientists or the farmers might say, we are headed to a catastrophe, folks, mm-hmm. if we don't change this situation.
That's right. So let's go ahead and open up our magazines to page 20, and we will have our first reading there in the first column of page 20.
May is the month when Ellis's bees work the blooming trees and flowers, collecting pollen and nectar. When wind blows the fine powders from corn seeds over the blooming plants around his yard, many of the bees that return to the hive come back and die. David Fisher, Bayer's chief scientist for ecotoxicology, says insecticide-related bee kills are rare. Nevertheless, Bayer is now working with a consortium of organizations and scientists to minimize the airborne spread of planting dust.
So on our first day, we met a man by the name of Steve Ellis, and he is a commercial beekeeper. And so we pick up with him again here today, and we see that in May, that's the month when Ellis's bees work the blooming trees and flowers. And what are they doing?
They're collecting pollen and nectar.
Okay, that's right. And nectar is a sweet liquid that is produced by flowers and collected by the bees. And so May is an important month for the bees. When the wind blows the fine powders from corn seeds over the blooming plants around his yard, what happens?
Then many of the bees that return to the hive come back and die.
That's serious and to the point. right? Mm-hmm. I like when things are to the point, very clear,
yeah,
right?
That's so to the point, all right.
We see exactly what happens because of the toxins, because of the poison that it's affecting the beehives, and the bees are dying.
And I like how we start this paragraph, Brandon, because May is the month for flowers. We often think of that cute little rhyme, April showers bring May flowers, and here we're talking right about that.
Wow, it must be an accurate statement.
It must be. I think so.
All right, so we see that this is a serious problem. Next, we meet a man by the name of David Fisher, and he is Bayer's chief scientist for ecotoxicology. What in the world is ecotoxicology?
I knew you were going to ask me that one, Brandon. Ecotoxicology is the branch of science that deals with poisons and toxic substances occurring in the environment and their effects on the population and ecosystem. So it's also in our specialized terms for this article.
Okay, so it is a branch of science, and they do deal, or it deals with poisons and toxins.
I think we need to be aware that Bayer is a huge scientific company that provides a lot of things medically, but also one of the suppliers of the insecticide.
Okay. And so David Fisher says, insecticide-related bee kills are rare. Okay, so we've been talking a lot about insecticides and the toxins, but he is saying that the insecticide-related bee kills are rare. But then we move on. Nevertheless, Bayer is now working with a consortium of organizations. So he is working with a group of people.
Right. And a consortium is, in our vocabulary focus, they're an organization of several businesses or banks that join together as a group having a shared purpose or a common goal.
So he's working with organizations and scientists to minimize the airborne spread of planting dust. If he's minimizing it, or they are trying to minimize something, what are they doing?
They're trying to reduce something, Brandon.
That's right. And if something is airborne, that means it's in the air, right?
Exactly. It's out there.
Okay. And that's what's happening because, you know, they have the insecticides and everything, pesticides there in the fields, but the wind might blow it somewhere else and the bees pick it up. Right. Or I might blow it into the hives or whatever. And so that is a problem that it is airborne that causes an issue. And so we need to analyze all of this. We've been talking about this issue, but we want to analyze it more. We want to look into it more. Let's find out more in our next reading, Analyzing the Risks.
Analyzing the Risks. Since their introduction in the mid-1990s, neonicotinoids have sparked a quiet revolution in agriculture. Because they are considered far safer than their predecessors, they won fast-track approval by the EPA and are now the most widely used insecticides in the world. Made from a synthetic nicotine, they are a neurotoxin to insects. Used correctly, neonicotinoids are not supposed to kill bees and other insects that collect pollen and nectar. In 2013, after an extensive review, the USDA concluded that neonicotinoids may be contributing to the death of bees, but the evidence is insufficient to prove it. The EPA is now in the midst of an extensive review of the science, with results expected by 2018.
So now we take a look at the risks, or another look at the risk, and we're analyzing. If you're analyzing something, you're picking it apart and looking at the details of something. So since their introduction in the mid-1990s, neonicotinoids have sparked a quiet revolution. That's an interesting phrase, a quiet revolution.
Right. Quiet usually means that it's been something that's been happening behind the scenes, perhaps, or just hasn't had a lot of publicity, or people are not aware of what that's happened. But we see that neonicotinoids have changed the way cash crops are done, because they do help keep away pests from things like sunflower, canola, cotton, all these different cash crops. So in that way, they have been protecting those crops, and that's been a good thing. Well, at least they thought so.
Right. And we use the word here, revolution. That means a great change has come about. And a lot of people, you know, they liked this, or maybe some still do like it. They're using it. And it says they are considered far safer than their predecessors. So they're far safer than the chemicals that they were using before.
That's right. So that puts people at ease for sure.
And as a result, they want fast-track approval by the EPA. Fast-track.
Right. Fast-track means that it was done, well, we see that in our vocabulary focus. It means something that's done quickly, usually more competitively, and the route is more successful or an improvement on something. So here, because they felt that neonicotinoids were safe, they didn't really create any harm, then the EPA, the Environmental Protection Agency, said, okay, let's move with this quickly so that people can use it with their cash crops.
And this agency is a government agency that regulates environmental issues, and so they quickly approved it. And so now neonicotinoids are widely used in the world. It's not just in America. They're using it all across the world.
Tells us how they make them, too. They're made from a synthetic nicotine. They are neurotoxin to insects.
And synthetic, meaning artificial. And, of course, we know nicotine from cigarettes.
Exactly.
But it's a toxin, right, actually.
It is.
So that can be harmful, as we know, and they are a neurotoxin to insects, and neurotoxin is poisonous substance that affects the nervous system, and so that's useful for killing the insects. We want that to happen,
yes,
right?
Yes, we just don't want it to attack a human being's
that's
nervous
right.
system.
And we don't want to kill certain things. We don't want it to kill the bees, but we want it to kill harmful insects.
Exactly.
That's the key.
They destroy crops. That's what we're thinking, readers. These ones destroy crops, make it so that we cannot harvest them and bring them in for sale.
But are the neonicotinoids supposed to kill the bees, Amanda?
No, actually, that was the reason they were so widely used. If used correctly, they were not supposed to kill bees and other insects that collect pollen and nectar.
Okay, so they knew this ahead of time. They're like, hey, it's not supposed to do that, but some things don't always, you know, things don't always
right.
go as planned, right?
Well, yeah, they're talking about evidence here, but the evidence is insufficient to prove it. But it's enough evidence that it's raising questions.
So they had an extensive review in 2013. What did the USDA conclude, Amanda?
Well, they concluded that neonicotinoids may be contributing to the death of bees, but the evidence is insufficient to prove it.
Okay, so supposedly there's not enough evidence yet to prove it, so maybe they need to do more research. But there's something causing it, and so they have to really focus on this and figure out what the problem is. The EPA, though, is now in the midst of an extensive review of the science. So they are taking a look at it. And when do the results?
The results come in 2018. So we're in February 2015. I'm hoping they come in the beginning of 2018. So we're only 3 years away.
Yes, or maybe even sooner.
Yes, that would be great.
Better schedule, right? Okay, well, let's go ahead to our next reading. This is our last reading for this article.
Nonetheless, neonicotinoids have become the focus of a national fight that is raging over the fate of bees, largely because of a new and growing body of research showing that even at low doses, the compounds can have what scientists call sublethal effects. When bees are exposed to low doses of neonicotinoids, some scientists say, they falter and can't find their way home. In addition, researchers have found that neonicotinoids can undermine bees' immune systems making them susceptible to diseases. Something is clearly wrong. In the past decade, the amount of honey produced by each hive has crashed. I call it a death spiral, Ellis said.
Okay, so nonetheless, neonicotinoids have become the focus of a national fight that is raging over the fate of bees. So they're still doing all this research. They say, oh, it's insufficient. You know, the evidence is insufficient to prove that there were any effects on the bees, negative effects. But a lot of people don't buy that, right? There's a fight going on.
Right. It says, has become the focus of a national fight that is raging over the fate of bees, largely because of a new and growing body of research showing that even at low doses, the compounds can have what scientists call sublethal effects.
Okay, so there's a lot there to discuss. First of all, there's a fight that is raging. That you think of something raging, it's violent or it's extreme. And so people are making their voices known.
Right, and it's probably not going to go away when it's a raging fight.
And then we talk about the fate of something. What is the final outcome of the bees, right? And so they want it to be a good outcome. And so they're speaking up about it. And there is a growing body of research.
Right. In the previous paragraph, we learned about the USDA and also the EPA and doing their own research. But we learned that there is a separate body of research that is showing that scientists have found that the compounds of neonicotinoids are producing sublethal effects.
Okay, and so when we see the word lethal, we think of death.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
Sublethal is, you know, almost,
yes.
Something is almost dead or leading in that direction. So sublethal effects, very negative, not quite to lethal, but just before that. So when bees are exposed to low doses of neonicotinoids, some scientists say they falter and they can't find their way home. That's really sad, right?
Yes, I've seen it actually in action, okay? And I didn't realize the connection till actually we just were reading this article, even again. They actually become like they're drunk.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And you go, wow, I've never seen bees behave like that before. And it does become a concern. And if you've ever been in an area of a country where you know that there's lots of honey produced and there's lots of bees and that sort of thing, all of a sudden you may too see an unreasonable amount of dead bees in buildings or outside, and it's never been like that before. Okay, I'm not talking because it's the end of the season or something like that. It's just never been like that before.
Right.
Right. What it does is it actually blocks the memory receptors in the bees' brains, and that's what causes them to, what happens is they can't remember who they are or where they're supposed to be going.
Mm-hmm. And this is just from low doses of it.
Right.
And so, you know, with the larger doses, maybe it results in death. Mm-hmm. That's what they need to research. So they can't find their way home. That's a big problem. And then we learn more. In addition, researchers have found that neonicotinoids can undermine immune systems of the bees.
Right, making them susceptible to diseases. So when we think of undermine, we have that in our vocabulary focus, to gradually weaken or destroy someone or something. So they're becoming sickly.
That's right, because of their immune systems, they've been weakened.
Exactly.
And so that happens with us.
Exactly.
You know?
So we'll say we have all these bees that are sickly and poor health, ill, whatever you want to say, but it's a concern.
Right, and so even if, you know, the chemical isn't directly killing them, if it's weakening their immune systems, it can cause them to become ill and maybe die.
Right. And the other problem with neonicotinoid is that it does actually stay within the plants and the pollen of the plants for years. It's not just a season or 1 or 2 years. It actually stays within the system of that plant for quite a long time.
Very good. Okay. Or that's not good, but that's good information. Well, something is clearly wrong. Well, yeah, we know that after we've read this article, so that's an obvious statement. But in the past decade, the amount of honey produced by each hive has crashed. Now, we think of something crashing. We think of a car crash, one car crashing into another. But what does it mean here?
Crashed, it's just like it's dropped. So the bottom's dropped out, I often think. It's just not there anymore.
It's a sudden decline.
Yeah, sudden decline. Okay. It's gone.
Okay, and what does Ellis actually call it?
Well, for him, he calls it a death spiral, and that is one of our specialized terms. It means a situation that gets worse and is difficult to control because one bad event causes another, often resulting in disaster.
Wow, that's serious, right?
Mm-hmm.
We end this article on a very serious note talking about a death spiral. But sometimes, you know, when we talk about a serious subject, you know, you might think, wow, why are we talking about this? It's so sad. But at the same time, it's not over. We're talking about it, but things can change for the better. And so it's good to talk about something in this stage rather than waiting till the end and then telling everyone, oh, this is why the beast died.
Right. We want our listeners to be informed so that we don't have to necessarily wait till 2018 to do something about it or to be informed about it. Just to pay attention and ask the questions, okay, what can we do about it? Because perhaps one of our listeners has a solution to this. And I know that here in Taipei, National Taiwan University, they have also done their own studies as they saw a decline in the bee population already 2009. They came up with the same conclusion that the bees are unable to remember where they're going, even to the point that the larvae that the bee produces also takes in the neonicotinoid at such an early stage of the bee's life. So I think that's interesting that they've done that. And not only that, we've seen that in 2013, the European Union actually took some action and banned the use of neonicotinoids for 2 years, saying that it was an imminent risk into the bee's life.
Wow. Okay. And so, again, we see that this is a worldwide issue. It's not just in the United States or in North America. It is a worldwide issue, and people are taking measures to fight against this problem.
That's right, Brandon. And our readers also will want to be informed through our own article here with our sidebars, too, because of the extra information and also even the pictures on the three pages.
That's right. I'm glad you mentioned that, Lois, because we do have a sidebar there. On page 20, it's called A Game Changer. And so it says it's their delivery system that makes neonicotinoids truly novel. And so if something is novel, that means it's new, it's like nothing before, right?
Right, and that airplane in that picture is referred to as a crop duster. So it does exactly what it says. It puts chemical dust on the plants that are growing there.
Okay, and then we see with regards to neonicotinoids, the seeds are chemically coated. We see in the next paragraph there, as the chemical coated seed germinates and matures. So when a seed germinates, it's growing, right?
Right. What happens is the seed is put into the ground, and the seed, what happens is moisture goes into that seed, causing it to open and to start to grow. And as it goes from the soil up through the soil to the ground, we call that germination.
Well, the insecticide moves into the circulatory system and grows with the plant.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not like it's just there in the beginning stages. It actually grows with the plant.
Or at the end stages. We often think maybe they need it at the end stage just before they harvest. No, that's not the case.
That's right. It's there throughout. As a result, today all major crops and even many flowers are poisonous to insects, regardless of whether they need to be protected. So they put it on everything, regardless of whether they need it or not. And why do they do that? It's an insurance policy, right?
Right. An insurance policy means just doing something to be preventative or protected against something.
Right. You think you have insurance on your car, your house. It's protection. You know, if something happens and you get money for that. And so here they want to protect all of the plants. And they don't know if, you know, they think it's safe. At least when they first started using it, I thought it was safe. So I guess they thought, well, let's put it on everything and cover all of our bases. Okay. And hopefully, you know, that will take care of any unwanted insects, right? So it is an insurance policy. What does Ellis say here at the end?
Ellis says making plants themselves toxic is a whole different thing than killing bugs with a toxin.
Okay.
And some of the studies that are done in other countries right now are saying, why are we putting chemicals on places that don't need it? They've never had a problem, but yet we're still doing it.
Yeah, because, of course, you kill a bug with a toxin. Okay, fine. But when the plant itself is toxic and a bee comes and, you know, is harmed by that, or even, you know, we take it further, a human eats it, you know, something from the plant and that has toxins in it, that's a totally different level, a totally different story, right? And a lot of people, if they knew this, maybe a lot of people don't know it, if they knew this, they would probably want to say something about it or speak out about it, right?
Right, voice their opinion about it. And I mean, the thing is that this is the produce of this crop, or these crops, are in our supermarkets. So we as the consumer need to be informed about it so that we also know what to do and to protect our environment and protect the bees so that they're around in years to come.
All right, listeners, I hope that you have found this article to be very informative. And you can get some extra information through videos. There at the top of page 18, you will see 4 QR codes if you have your magazine open right now. And you can go ahead and use your smart device to check out our topic talk videos. We have skits and we have insights and other videos to watch. So be sure to do that. And we thank you so much for joining us today. And we hope you will join us next time. Until then, this is Brandon,
Lois,
and Amanda
saying goodbye.
Goodbye.